This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Hello and welcome to Little Gold Men, the award season podcast from Vanity Fair.
It's such an honor to present this next award.
And here are the nominees.
And the Oscar goes to...
And the Oscar goes to...
And I can't deny the fact that you like me right now. You like me.
I'm the king of the world.
There's a mistake. Moonlight, you guys won Best Picture.
I am Katie Rich. I'm here with Richard Lawson.
Hello.
And with Rebecca Ford.
Hi.
David Canfield is off on vacation. How dare he? But he left us with a very handy primer to Emmy season. He did his work ahead of time. And it's helpful because we're going to talk about Emmy season. I think we promised this last week as we looked ahead to the coming Oscar year. But Emmys are really and truly upon us. It's spring TV season. A lot of the big shows that will be competing at the Emmys have already premiered, like The Bear, all the way last summer. But there's a lot of new stuff coming up on the horizon, too. And two of them premiered this past weekend. And Richard, as our designated recapper of Succession on Still Watching, you know, you can tell us more about latest what the Roys are up to. So we'll get into Emmy season and maybe go ahead and start with Succession, actually. It's back. There's one episode out as we record this. Richard, I guess you are one of the lucky reviewers who's seen four, and you have to try not to lord that over the rest of us.
I have seen a whole month's worth of Succession, but I'm sworn to secrecy about pretty much everything. But I think as people saw on Sunday night, like, it's back in full form.
Yeah. You
know, like, it's just as entertaining, just as clever. I mean, I know us in the media perhaps focused a little too much on the whole The Hundred of it all. That was sort of mocking Semaphore and other sort of recent, you know, VC-backed editorial startups.
As representatives of old media, we enjoy any chance to dunk on new media.
Well, I started a new media, then I switched to old media, mm-hmm. and here I will stay.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're like the Roy children. They started with The Hundred, then they pivoted right. back to the fictional version of the New York Times.
Yeah. But anyway, you know, the performances are great. I think that something that David interestingly pointed out in his piece about, like, these big Emmy questions is that the voting system is going to be different this year. So between Succession and White Lotus, we might not see 8 actors from each show nominated because the voters have to be a little more discriminating about who they put on their ballots. Uh-huh. But, like, it's really hard to look at Succession and those kids and Logan himself and be like, and not even just the kids, but, like, the ancillary, you know, the Gregs and Toms of it all. Like, who do you pick? And based on what I've seen, I think I have some ideas, but I don't want to spoil anything.
Yeah, I'm so curious who gets to really, like, go all out and have those moments this season, because it's going to be impossible to pick. There's so many strong performers, and, you know, you sort of assume that Brian Cox and Jeremy Strong will be sort of leading that list, but I'm excited to see some of the others really have moments this last and final season.
But I guess the big question is, because this is the final season, I just looking at Twitter this morning, last night, like, when Succession aired, like, Sarah Snook, everyone's just kind of champing at the bit. But then you have White Lotus kind of standing big time in her, and Jennifer Coolidge standing in her way. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious how these two HBO juggernauts, one of which will have aired many, many months prior to the Emmys, and even the voting, I'm curious how they're going to square off against each other.
Looks like Brian Cox and Jeremy Strong have competed against each other in lead actor. And Jeremy Strong won once in 2020, and then they both lost to Lee Jung-jae from Squid Game last year. And then Bob Odenkirk still hanging in there waiting for anyone to give him a dang Emmy, which again, something people are champing at the bit for, as you mentioned, Rebecca. David's thing about the supporting actors, I think, is worth diving into a little bit, because if you remember, I think it was last year, like, every major actor on the first season of The White Lotus got a nomination. And the reason this happened is because the Emmy ballot worked in this crazy way where you could write down as many actors as you wanted per category. So if you love The White Lotus and you feel like you don't have to fill in the 7 or 8 slots, which is how many will wind up actually being nominated, you just have to go down the list. And now they have made it so you can only nominate as many people as will actually fit into that category, which is how the Oscars work, which is how most other things work, as far as I know. It's such a quirky rule that I never would have known it if David hadn't pointed it out. But it does really you make for something like Succession or White Lotus, as we mentioned, where there's so much competition, especially in those supporting categories. Like, it could get kind of a bloodbath getting in that competition.
Yeah, I felt like last year it looked sort of insane. And you want a performance from a show that maybe isn't as beloved, but the performance is outstanding, to have a chance, you know? So I'm glad they changed it. I thought that was an insane way to do those nominations.
Yeah. So last year at the Emmys for Succession, Matthew McFadyen wins an Emmy for playing Tom. You have nominations for Jeremy Strong, Brian Cox, Nicholas Braun, Kieran Culkin, J. Smith Cameron, Sarah Snook. I think that might be everybody. I mean, do you think that this is going to be one of those Emmy things where they just want to give something to Matthew McFadyen again and again? Or are they going to start spreading the wealth? Or is it all just going to be moot because the White Lotus is going to swoop in with everything?
Well, I feel like Richard would know more than we do since he's seen who
he's
gets
not
the,
allowed to say.
The meaty performances. But I feel like they're going to spread the wealth. I had always been hopeful for Kieran Culkin to get a win, because I think he does such amazing things with this character, and I hope he has a lot to do this season. But yeah, I also think the story arc for Matthew's character is a little different this season. I don't know, from what we've seen in the first episode. So I feel like it could go any way with that supporting group. It's so competitive.
I mean, you look at the scene between Shiv and Tom in their apartment as they kind of discuss the dissolution of their marriage. And it's like, and that's a rare moment of some vulnerability and like sensitivity being shown between characters on the show. And that alone, it's like, okay, so those two are really the standouts. But then, you know, again, without spoiling anything, there is an episode coming up where everyone gets a moment that is worthy of an Emmy clip reel thing, you know? And it's a tough one, and I really think that they have the benefit. I believe that the show will be over definitely before Emmy voting has to happen. So, like, people will have a clear picture of, because I think what a certain number of episodes have to have aired before the cutoff, right? But all of Succession will have aired. So,
yeah, I think it ends Memorial Day weekend, sometime around then.
Oh, okay. So, they'll be right under the wire, and then they'll vote, I guess, in July or whatever. And, so I don't know how the season ends, or how the show ends. Maybe someone will emerge clearly, like, the kind of story favorite. I guess maybe the question that Chris and I talk about each week on Still Watching is, maybe the person who wins the Emmy is the kid or whoever else gets on top of the Waystar Royko throne at the end.
Whoever makes it to the Iron Throne, the brand of Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
I'm firmly in the record of saying that I don't think any of the kids are going to get to the top of the throne. Like, I think that would be too satisfying an ending for all of them for the tone of this show. I predicted Frank just as like a random lackey. I don't know if any of the rest of you have firm predictions on this.
I did Connor Roy because he doesn't want it.
Yes,
I think he's going to win the presidency, but I don't think that there will be a Waystar Royko throne at all. I think they're going to somehow destroy it in the process of fighting for it.
I don't want you to tell me, Richard, because you may have seen this far, but I really hope he gets married at the foot of the Statue of Liberty with a bunch of fireworks. I love how deranged that idea was. He proposed to poor Willa, who's just got along with everything thus far for, I guess, some gain she has in mind at the end of it. I don't know what it is.
I can't say anything.
More productions of Sands, I guess, with fewer sand fleas. We should note that, you know, when it comes to the Best Drama Series Emmy, which Succession has won before also, HBO is really competing with itself in this category. The White Lotus is now a drama because Jennifer Coolidge carried over season to season. Maybe we can talk about how weird a rule that makes it. And then The Last of Us and House of the Dragon, I think everyone agrees, are really likely nominees in that category. I think White Lotus is the only one I can imagine beating Succession there. And you guys can tell me if I'm wrong, but I think we tried to crunch the numbers on this, and a listener can tell us if we're wrong, but for one network to get four drama series nominations is basically unheard of. And I think a lot of people at HBO are kind of wondering if they really can pull it off.
Yeah. I mean, obviously USA did it in the famous Suits, Burn Notice, White Collar, Monk Year. No, that didn't happen, unfortunately. Yeah, that would be crazy. But then the question becomes campaign money and where you do you even bother. Like, do you need to if you're just competing with yourself and like one other show? There's also, I mean, I don't know if it'll really register, but like Perry Mason is coming back for an unexpected second season. And, you know, there is other stuff in the pipeline. I would almost wonder, and this is a question that David addresses in his piece, if the Bear, they decided to run it as a drama, which it kind of is, even though it's a half hour or whatever, like, would that kind of be the underdog thing to kind of all the HBO shows cancel each other out and this like hot new thing kind of, you know, takes the crown. I don't know. It's not going to happen, though, because they've decided the Bear is a comedy.
I mean, if Barry is a comedy, then the Bear's a comedy, I guess, right. is where yeah. we land this. Like, two of the most stressful television shows I've ever seen. I mean, do we want to talk about comedy then? Because the Bear is sort of at the top of that pile, but it's also a really interesting set of competitors. I mean, Ted Lasso is another show that has recently returned, like Succession, and I want to talk about Yellow Jackets later also. But is it just me, or is the Ted Lasso wave much, much quieter than it's been in previous years?
It definitely feels more mixed. I mean, we can't forget that it won for the first two seasons, so it's technically undefeated
yeah.
in this category. So I would never count it out. And it sounds like, you know, a lot of the cast does a lot of press. And I from what I understand, Sudeikis is going to be doing quite a bit as well. So because the second season was a little more mixed as well. And I was like, oh, maybe it's not going to win. And it did. So
yeah.
Especially because the messaging is this is its final season, supposedly. Maybe not. But, you know, with that messaging, I think that gives it a boost as well. So it to me, it feels kind of like a three-way race if we're looking at Lasso, The Bear, and Abbott Elementary. So
yeah.
And super competitive. So I think it's a really interesting group.
And that would make it, I mean, I know The Bear is mostly just like on Hulu, right? But that would be a basic cable show, a network show, and a streaming show, you know, so yeah. you're getting a spread of how TV is watched, which is interesting. But yeah, I mean, I think the thing with Ted Lasso and anything else really is that obviously Emmy voters famously just like give into inertia. If it won for season two, shouldn't it win for season three? You know, like, well, and then eventually that stops. You know, I don't think any show's won for every season it's been on the air, but like, I don't know. Ted Lasso, yeah, has cooled a bit, I think, just because people are more used to it. It's not the new special thing, but that might not say anything about the Academy voters.
Yeah.
A show that I'm very curious about as a sort of insurgent comedy would be a show that's not out yet called Beef that's going to be on Netflix, which Steven Yeun, Ali Wong, it's, again, it is a comedy, but it's also dark and about, you know, anger and other sort of violent impulse. And I don't know, that feels like it's an A24 show that's going to be on Netflix. I feel like that could be buzzy. And, you know, if people are looking for the new kid on the block to give awards to, that could be it.
Yeah, I loved Beef. I think it's really well done. It's, again, it's kind of like, are voters going to go with these dark comedies, or are they going to do something more like a Ted Lasso or an Abbott that's sort of a lighter traditional comedy? I don't know which way they're going to go, but I thought Beef was really incredible and is one of Netflix's like big pushes this year, which is worth noting.
Well, and the funny thing about like, do they want to give the comedy Emmy to a lighter thing or a darker thing? They kind of have the dark comedies in White Lotus and Succession, which are dramas, you know? Uh-huh. So they can kind of serve two impulses and give it to something like Abbott Elementary, which is more feel good and has been, you know, a absolute life raft for like the awards viability of network television.
Yeah.
So maybe that they can kind of, why not both? You know, they can have both their cake and eat it too.
And Abbott has won so many awards that I thought they were going to probably take it last year, but this second season feels even stronger. It's obviously a longer season, and
yeah,
they just keep winning. It just feels like they have a really good chance.
Yeah, Abbott was so new. You kind of forget it really only had a half season that first season because it premiered in December. So like it has had more time to build up steam. I guess it was at the Emmys last year when Quinta won for writing. And it was like, oh, okay, like I guess this is really happening. And then as so often happens when we watch award shows, the momentum we're imagining in our heads is not actually playing out on stage. So Jean Smart won the Comedy Actress Award last year, but she's not eligible this year. Hacks didn't come back in time, partly because of Jean Smart's health. So it's a really interesting open field. A lot of people on Gold Derby are looking at Christina Applegate at the top of the field for Dead to Me, which is very interesting to me. I would have thought it'd be more Quinta Brunson, Jenna Ortega, maybe Natasha Lyonne, maybe Selena Gomez. There's some really good performances in there.
Yeah, the Ortega thing is interesting. Obviously, Wednesday was an enormous hit that I embarrassingly have not watched. There's a dance, you know. Jenna Ortega also has a big smash hit movie in Scream 6. So she's very much in the discourse. There also has been, of late, with Zendaya winning Emmys, younger actresses are winning like top acting prizes. You know, maybe it's different for a comedy versus a drama, but like, I don't know. I could see a clear path to Ortega, even if years ago I would have been like, well, she's a shoo-in for the Golden Globe and like kind of America Ferrara, Claire Danes years past. But yeah, I don't know. People love that show. So maybe Ortega is not one to rank too low.
Yeah. Yeah, David brought up Zendaya in his write-up in a really interesting way, because Euphoria will not be eligible this year. And he thought that meant that Melanie Lynskey for Yellow Jackets had a clear path at the drama actress statue, which had not even occurred to me. I think a lot of us thought she might win last year because Yellow Jackets was so ascendant. But then Zendaya wound up winning, I think, for the second time. Drama actress does feel less competitive than some of these other categories we've been talking about. But, you know, Bella Ramsey is right there for The Last of Us. If we think it's not necessarily going to win in drama series, maybe that's a place for it. But I think I'm letting myself get excited about the notion that Melanie Lynskey might win for the second season of Yellow Jackets.
Yeah, it's really a question of how that season is received. You know, I reviewed it. I saw six episodes. Again, I won't spoil anything, but it played a little bit much more unevenly for me than the first season did, which is to say nothing of the performances, which are still very strong. It's just there are so many of them, you know. And Lynskey is obviously in the adult storyline, the sort of, as my book editor once called about an ensemble novel, a first among equals, you know. And she gets that campaigning. Well, maybe a Tawny Cypress or a Juliette Lewis or a Christina Ricci would be put in the featured actress category. I'm not really sure how they're going to divide that up. But, like, I think it's just really a matter of will Yellow Jackets, like, have that same lightning strike that the first season was such a sleeper hit. It kind of arrived without much fanfare and then grew a lot of esteem, you know, and attention by the end of its run. If it can pull that off for a second season, which is really difficult, as many a show can tell you, I think David's right that Lynskey is in a really prime position.
I do wonder if, like, Helen Mirren's really going to surge in this category because she's Helen Mirren, and mm-hmm. you know, and I agree. This category isn't as cutthroat as I think it's been in years past, so there's a good chance for Lynskey, and I think we're all sort of hoping that happens, but. I could see a surprise happening here for sure.
I feel like all of these actresses are very grateful that George and Tammy is not a continuing series, that it's just a one-off, because Chastain, who probably is also going to win a Tony in June, I think, God. For A Doll's House. So Chastain will have theater, even if she doesn't win the Tony, she'll be nominated for sure. And she's definitely, I think, going to win for George and Tammy. She's already won a bunch of awards for it. And so maybe, like, in another year when White Lotus was still kind of cheating and being considered a limited series, like, there'd be more competition there. But because now these supposedly limited series, even like Last of Us, have moved into just now we're normal TV, that leaves Chastain's path, I think, pretty open.
God, all she's going to need is the Grammy.
Exactly.
Yeah. And she's going to do it. She's Jessica Chastain. It'll happen.
I got a release today that Apple picked up a series starring her called The Savant, based on a Cosmopolitan article. So I got to go look up what that's going to be. But so mark her down for next year's Emmy race, I guess.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/cardcalculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Should we talk about limited series since you mentioned George and Tammy? Because it also feels less cutthroat. I mean, it's been like the category in so many years past, and it feels a little bit less so this time.
Yeah, what are we really looking at as like potential contenders?
Well, there's the Jeffrey Dahmer story, which is a pleasant diversion, which I have not watched. And I know I should, but like, I think for all the obvious reasons, it's not like the thing I'm jumping to watch. But that's I think it's the buzziest of all the shows in there.
Yeah, there's Fleischman is in trouble. I feel like played really well. Feels like it was a long time ago now, but I think that'll be a real contender, especially with the actors that are in it. And then Blackbird did really well at the, what award show was that? The Globes?
I think that Taron Egerton won a Globe and Paul Walter Hauser won a Critics' Choice, or vice versa. Like, those shows were like 3 or 4 days apart.
Yep.
And I remember that. I remember Blackbird being very prominent. And I think the same thing that like Evan Peters won a Golden Globe and then Niecy Nash won a Critics' Choice. It all gets mixed up in my head. But yes, both of those shows felt very strong at those award shows. Like Daisy Jones and the Six has premiered since then, and then Love and Death is on the horizon, the HBO show that's, you know, the same story as Candy last year, speaking of Melanie Lynskey, the Texas axe murder. But there's not anything super huge in that limited category on the horizon that I can tell that would compete with Blackbird and Dahmer and Fleischman, I don't think.
No, I mean, I guess the Dahmer thing for me is like, didn't that come out last summer? You know,
so did The Bear.
And is it too long? Exactly. And I always think that the, you know, the Television Academy's institutional memory is as limited as mine is. And that's time and time again, you know, proven wrong. Like they're perfectly happy to vote for something that aired a year ago.
Well, The Bear is going to have the advantage that the next season is going to start right around voting, right? Isn't that the plan?
Yeah, it's doing the thing that only Murders has also done, and I think is doing again this summer.
Really smart way to boost your Emmy voting when people are about to forget about your show. So
yeah.
Obviously, the limited series can't do that. I was curious about Swarm, but the reception seems very, very mixed on that one. So I don't know if that's going to be a real contender, which is the Donald Glover show.
A lot of affection for Dominique Fishback, I feel like I've seen, though.
Yes, great performance. Like maybe in, you know, performance for her.
Yeah, and she's another actor who has, you know, she's younger on the younger side, but she's been simmering for a long time. She's pretty much good in everything I've seen her in. And now this is this big lead role that's also pretty different from stuff she's played in the past. And so, and that show has had a lot of buzz, not always, pun, but not always in good buzz, but like, does that ultimately matter? Like it probably, it's been received positively enough that any attention is good attention.
Two shows we haven't mentioned thus far that have won a lot of Emmys in their past are The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, which is returning for its final season, and The Crown, which we have watched and talked about a lot, but feels almost non-existent at this point. I mean, I think Elizabeth Debicki is a goddess among us, as we can all agree, but like it's funny how the heat on that show seems to have really dissipated.
Yeah.
It is weird.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of the answer to that.
I think the issue is that The Crown is just biding its time until the next and final season, because that's the one where Diana dies, I'm assuming, you know. And I think
she's going to die early based on the timeline that the new season sets. I mean,
I don't know. They stretch things out, though.
That's true.
You know, although did it end with them going to Paris?
It ends with her like on the yacht. I think she was on the week before she went to Paris, like very close to that point.
You don't think Peter Morgan can stretch a whole season of television
into a week?
A week? You don't think he can do that?
That yacht episode worked great for Succession, so they're just going to do a full season on a yacht.
The Crown is a funny one. I mean, The Crown, in my mind, I mean, Ozark was sort of this, now it's over, but The Crown really is like the one of the last remnants of like a different era of Netflix.
Yeah.
That they haven't quite, they just don't seem to be in the business of making as many prestige TV shows as they used to. And The Crown is this big expensive thing. Maybe the taste for it has waned or people are just biding their time until the final season. But yeah, it doesn't really feel like it's a big player this year for whatever reason.
Yeah, I could see Debicki getting in, but it feels like beyond that, it's a little bit of strep.
I mean, she was nominated for a SAG, so people are aware of the performance, certainly.
Well, it's funny when you think of the shows that Netflix has really succeeded with at the Emmys in the last few years. Squid Game was this, you know, international pickup that no one really saw coming as an awards juggernaut, and now Wednesday is kind of poised to do the same thing. I mean, that came from Tim Burton, like it had, you know, more of a Hollywood pedigree behind it, but still. And The Crown is one of those shows that I think is really hurt by the Netflix binge model, where you don't get like to kind of chew over it week by week. So you thinking of it as a kind of a relic of another era feels spot on to me, Richard.
Yeah, and actually that's a good point about the bingey shows. You know, like a lot of what we've talked about, I mean, mostly because it's HBO dominating, is week to week, you know, and so that year ago doesn't feel quite as long because you watched it over the span of 2 months versus like a show that premiered a year ago and all the episodes you watched in one weekend, like maybe it doesn't, you know, linger as much as the traditional model does.
Yeah. I mean, maybe Beef will reverse some of that trajectory in terms of Netflix buzz. As you guys were saying, like it's from A24, who's really on top of the world right now. And it's different. It's a really hard to define kind of show. It's kind of more in the dark comedy line we've come to associate with HBO. That could be an interesting path forward for them.
And in the form of Ali Wong, it's, you know, we've certainly seen Steven Yeun like do dark stuff before he was on Walking Dead, for Christ's sake. But like, Ali Wong is mostly known as, you know, she's in a couple comedy films. She has a lot of great stand-up specials. And this is a totally different kind of turn for her. And that's exciting. That's maybe more of like an Oscar-y narrative than it would be an Emmy one. But I don't know. There's probably precedent for that.
And the supporting cast of Beef is also so good. I mean, it's you recognize Maria Bello and Ashley Park, but there's a whole group of actors that I think has really seen stealing moments. So I think Netflix is going to really, really put their weight behind it, and it'll be a real contender.
Is there anything else still to come that we want to flag for people? I think I mentioned that it doesn't seem like there's huge, or like Barry's returning, like that's a big return. There's a couple of new things premiering. Is there, like, without giving away what we're not allowed to talk about, anything that we should flag for people?
Dead Ringers, the Amazon show with Rachel Weisz, which is, I guess, a series remake of the David Cronenberg film. This one has a lot of interesting talent, like in the writer's room and directing the show. I haven't seen any of it yet, but like, Rachel Weisz is a force to be reckoned with, certainly. This feels like a big splashy project. So I would definitely put that on my radar if I were wondering what to watch this spring.
Well, I mentioned Barry returning. Schmigadoon is also returning, which is, one of those niche shows that I feel like is made for me and five other people who I know, but seems to be doing very well. And it's like a Bob Fosse parody this season. And I think it won the original song Emmy, which, as we all know, is a category very near and dear to my heart. The Great is returning. Nicholas Hoult and Elle Fanning are kind of unstoppable on that show. There's a Bridgerton spinoff, Queen Charlotte, which I'm very intrigued by. I don't know if it's going to be the like big sensation like what Bridgerton was, but it could certainly be up there. And then I've got my eye on Mrs. Davis, the like Damon Lindelof executive produced sci-fi nun robot show with Betty Gilpin. Somehow all of those adjectives are going to fit together. I mean, there's definitely fun stuff on there, but it feels, you know, last season, I think we were looking at April, May being like, look at these enormous limited series like The Staircase and Under the Banner of Heaven that are all premiering at the end of the year. And they all kind of failed to capture the buzz that was put upon them. So maybe kind of flying a little bit more under the radar with potential to surprise is a stronger way to go in.
Oh, and speaking of sort of under the radar, American Born Chinese is a Disney Plus show, which puts it under the radar for us. But it's with Michelle Yeoh and Stephanie Hsu and Ki Hoi Kwan.
Now, where have I heard those names together before?
Which we're all very familiar with at this point. I don't know if they're really going to push it as a contender, but, you know, it feels like I wouldn't mind seeing them again for Emmy season. So
yeah.
I'm curious to check that out too.
I feel like they deserve a break though. I want them to go on a long vacation before anyone makes them go to an Emmy event.
No, you got to strike while the iron's hot, people.
Just, oh my God.
Keep going. Keep going.
Know that fizzy feeling you get when you read something really good, watch the movie everyone's been talking about, or catch the show the internet can't get over? At the Pop Culture Happy Hour podcast, we chase that feeling 5 times a week. We talk about the buzziest movies, TV, music, books, and more. From lowbrow to highbrow to in between, catch the Pop Culture Happy Hour podcast from NPR.
Well, as one last challenge to all of our long-term memories, is there anything that you hope remains top of mind for people, even if it is a little bit older, maybe not as old as the bear, but you know, that you want to continue to be a competitor this season?
I really loved the first season of Somebody Somewhere, and it didn't do well with its first season of the Emmys. It didn't get any nominations, but I think Bridget Everett is doing something really special with that show. So I hope maybe voters pay a little more attention with season two.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned Christina Applegate, Katie, already, but like, I think Dead to Me was a hit on Netflix, and Applegate has obviously been having some health struggles in her personal life, and like, regardless of that, though, or whatever, in spite of it, it's such a great performance that, again, kind of like the Ali Wong thing, it's like a different, darker side of Christina Applegate than we've seen in the past, and yeah, I would like her to at least get the recognition of a nomination.
I'm going to throw out Poker Face.
Oh, yeah.
We talked about it at some point on the show, I think. It was such a hit or it felt like a hit for Peacock. It's so hard to know. And I find myself in this weird position of rooting for Peacock. Like, I want there to be more competition in streamers. I think it is having a little bit of a moment. And I would really like for that to carry through, both because the show is really great and I, you know, want Peacock to be a real contender there. I think Natasha Lyonne is great on it. I love the, like, the writing and the return of the procedural vibe behind it. It's a beautifully made show. I feel like it could really compete in a lot of comedy categories. You know, I don't know if it's going to go, like, give Abbott and Ted Lasso a run for their money, but I think it deserves to be in the mix.
Yeah. I would also say, I mean, embarrassingly, these conversations are hard for me because a lot of the recreational TV watching I do is reality. Just because.
So give us the reality rundown, yeah. Then.
Well, I prefer the British version, but, which is how I preface everything these days when I'm talking about reality TV. Although, unless it's Survivor, now I can say I prefer the Australian version. But the Traitors was this really fun breakout show, kind of like that game Mafia you would play at a theater party or whatever, but in maximalist form. And the American version takes place in the same castle as the British version. It's hosted by Alan Cumming in the American version. I don't like him as much as the British host, but whatever. It's a fun show. It seemed to be a zeitgeisty hit for Peacock, speaking of. So it would be fun to see Alan Cumming getting in the mix with like a Padma Lakshmi or RuPaul or any of the other, you know, competition show hosts who get nominated every year.
I feel like Alan Cumming leading into he's been the MC on Broadway for decades, like becoming an MC on reality TV is like such a natural fit. Like, I'd be happy to see him showing up, like bring back Hollywood Squares so Alan Cumming can be on one of the squares. Is Hollywood Squares actually on? I feel like it might be.
I think it might be.
Like, hasn't Whoopi Goldberg been on Hollywood Squares for 10 years? Well, that does it for this week's episode. We'll be back next week. We'll have more movies to talk about. It's a fun and vibrant spring of movie releases, which is always a good thing. And of course, more television as Emmy season continues. Find us at vanityfair.com, where you can read David's excellent rundown of Emmy season, his contribution to this episode, even though he was not with us. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at VF Awards Insider. And we're on Twitter on our own. I am at Katie Rich and Richard.
Rylaws.
And Rebecca.
Becca M. Ford.
Our editor and producer is Brett Bukes, and this week's award for the best description of what we're actually basing our predictions on goes to me. The momentum we're imagining in our heads is not...
Hey, I'm Brian Stelter, host of Inside the Hive from Vanity Fair. This week, with the help of Dan Adler and Olivia Nuzzi, we're going inside the media circus swirling around Donald Trump's criminal trial.
People want coverage of Donald Trump. They're sort of shades of 2015, 2016. I found it to be a total break from the reaction to a lot of Trump coverage in the last 2 years.
Join me, Brian Stelter, on Inside the Hive from Vanity Fair. Listen wherever you get podcasts.